From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a job interview. The candidate is a member of Generation Z, Gen Z, let's say 22 years old. The employer is surprised to find out that the job candidate has brought his parents to the interview. Does this sound plausible? Well, two new surveys indicate that it is. A resume template survey found that 26% of the Gen Z respondents involve their parents in the actual job interview. That survey was released last month. And this past winter, a survey from Intelligent.com found that 19% of recent college graduates brought at least one parent to their job interview. Here's how The Hill broke it down. Quote, "The applicants who involved their parents were mixed between in-person interviews and online interviews. For those that said they had a parent near them during a virtual interview, 71% said that parent was off camera and advising them, 29% said their parent was visible on camera, and the majority of on-camera parents spoke directly to the hiring manager, according to the survey," end quote. And they quote executive resume writer Andrew Steiner, who said, quote, "It's understandable parents wanting to ensure that their child does well in an interview or that an employer is reputable. Conversely, it's hard to see where a parent being directly involved in a job interview is appropriate. It does not signal confidence to a hiring company on behalf of the child," end quote. And I admit, to me, this read like a Bigfoot story. Lots of supposed sightings, parents at job interviews. I want confirmed evidence here. I realize that some Gen Zers are saying in surveys that, yes, they are bringing their parents to job interviews. But until I see the actual evidence, I'm going to assume it's just an urban legend designed to scare certain news viewers. But some are coming forward to defend this trend. LA Times columnist LZ Granderson writes that the pandemic is to blame for some arrested social development. He says, quote, "Some young people would opt to bring a familiar face into an unfamiliar setting. And in some cases, they'll choose the only adults they interacted with in person while we were sheltered in place, their parents. The image doesn't seem so ridiculous when you think about it like that. The presence of a parent can bring reassurance. That doesn't mean the young person can't do the job without mom or dad. It means that job interviews are stressful. It means the pandemic's full toll is still becoming apparent," end quote. And the Intelligent.com survey also found the following trends. 53% of Gen Z job applicants struggled with eye contact. Employers said that 50% asked for unreasonable compensation. 47% of applicants dressed inappropriately. Now, the eye contact thing, I see that in youth sports. That checks out to me. But the compensation, who defines what is unreasonable or reasonable? And on dressing inappropriately, norms are changing, and no doubt the pandemic sped up a move toward more casual workwear. Maybe you think that's a positive change, and maybe you lament it. This hour, let's talk about all of that with our guests this hour. Welcome to the man representing all of Gen Z, Joe Morrell, sales coordinator with the Swan Family of Restaurants, co-creator of the Michella Project. And I'm just kidding, Joe. You do not have to represent an entire generation, just yourself.
That is quite the stressful challenge, so I appreciate it.
What is the Michella Project?
The Michella Project is an interactive dining experience that I created with one of my good friends, Natasha. And it's about kind of building community and fun through food and beverage. And we run it out of Pearson's, which is the cafe that the Swan family owns and operates.
And you are Gen Z, yes?
I am 22 years old.
Gen Z, you're not the guy that I referenced in the intro, by the way.
Hopefully not.
Okay. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Welcome.
Thanks,
to
Evan.
Alex Zampasochny is CEO of Clario Vision. First of all, welcome back to the program. Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
Here.
It's good to be here.
Tell us what Clario is.
So Clario is a spin-out from the University of Rochester based on some laser research there and we create products for the ophthalmology industry.
And you have had a long resume of other companies as well, fair to say?
Oh, yeah. No, over 20-plus years I've been working in Rochester, and in that span have looked through many thousands of resumes, done at least, I think, 1,400 to 1,500 interviews in person or otherwise, so, and hired several hundred people. So, yes, I look forward to this discussion.
Alex has a lot to say. Kathleen Pringle, executive career coach and founder of the Kathleen Pringle Group. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And tell us what the Kathleen Pringle Group
okay.
is. And get right on that microphone.
Okay. So we are a firm that works with individuals, leaders, ambitious professionals, and teams to really focus on career advancement, team engagement, leadership coaching, and organizational fitness.
Thank you for making time for us here.
You're welcome.
Alex, how many interviews did you say that you think you've done over?
I think, I mean, I was trying to figure this out in the way here. I think probably between 1,400 and 1,500.
Interviews. Wow.
Yeah.
And how many in the last 12 to 24 months?
I mean, not as many. It's partially, I think I've become a little bit better at figuring out who is kind of worth interviewing, maybe. But no, I mean, still, I don't know, 100, 200. Quite a bit.
And your first interview that you, at least roughly, goes back what? Two decades?
Over 20 years.
20
yes.
years. So how much change have you seen?
I've definitely seen a lot of change. I wouldn't necessarily say that it all started just in the last few years. I mean, my sense was that about maybe 10 years ago, things were already quite different. And at that time, I mean, what I attributed it to was most people started applying through all of these job websites, and they almost started treating it the way I sort of hear that people treat or behave as a result of online dating, where as before, people would identify a few jobs that were a really good fit for them, and they would do their best to really put their kind of best foot forward, right? They knew about the company. They would oftentimes follow up in writing. I mean, they would dress appropriately. And then somewhere around 10 years ago, I noticed that people kind of started taking this shotgun approach where they just sort of applied to hundreds of things, and then they were going to kind of figure out like what was appropriate afterward. And I noticed at that point that people would sort of come in not necessarily prepared, but almost expecting me to tell them about why they should be interested. And then they were going to kind of take the next step of figuring out whether or not they were going to continue. Now, it's definitely become even more problematic. And when I say problematic, I don't want to make it sound like all people who have recently graduated are somehow not great employees. I mean, we still find tons of great employees, but the percentage of people that really are not ready to be on those interviews has definitely gone up in the last few years, and it's been quite noticeable.
Have you seen? Let me just go down the list here. Have you seen a change in eye contact?
Yes.
Is that related, you think, to phones? People are always on their phones; they're not making eye contact anymore.
I think that's part of it. I mean, I've seen it a lot more with male applicants, certainly. And yes, I mean, I assume that has something to do with just a lot more technology. I mean, sometimes these things are also maybe related to some sort of other issues. And part of the problem is you kind of can't ask and you can't necessarily assume. I mean, people on the autism spectrum, they also are not great at eye contact. So you don't necessarily know sometimes why something is happening.
Okay. That's why we're trying to speak just in kind of 30,000 square mm-hmm. feet here, or a 30,000 foot view here. But the big one to me is, have you actually seen parents at a job interview?
So I've seen, yes. I mean, so first I've seen several parents who brought their kids, and I saw them sitting in the parking lot, you know, kind of saying some things to them and as they came in, and then talking to them when they came out. So I've seen that. The one and only time where I've actually seen somebody come in person, I mean, that one was supposed to be more of an informational interview, so maybe it seemed more appropriate for them, but it was really, really odd and certainly made me much less interested in trying to find some sort of fit. But the other thing is, I mean, you mentioned about virtual interviews, and I've had multiple times where I could see that the person was looking off camera. In a couple instances, I actually heard some sort of whispering, sounded like coaching, during the virtual interview. And I don't know if it's parents, but I think it's quite possible.
Does that bother you?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's I think it shows a lack of readiness to really probably be independent in the workplace.
Okay. And the reason I said I think this is the Bigfoot part of the story for me was I can't relate to it. I'm not trying, and I don't want listeners, especially Gen Z listeners, to think this is like a pile on Gen Z hour. I don't want to do that. I understand that norms change. Sometimes norms change that make you uncomfortable. Sometimes norms change that you think are a long time coming. Mm-hmm. And I try not to be the get off my lawn guy. When it comes to, I try to be open-minded to change. I can't relate to bringing a parent literally into the interview. Now, sitting in the car, dropping you off, talking to you. I mean, I may, sure.
Right. No, that one's more understandable. It still feels a little off, right? I mean, I think let's say if I didn't have a car and I needed a ride for my parents, I would probably have them parking quite a few streets away. Just like, you know, in many decades ago, when you go to a party, you typically wouldn't have them pulling right up to the house of the party you're trying to go to.
Fair. So before I turn to your co-panelists here, just explain to listeners, if someone walks in and they've brought mom or dad to the actual interview to sit with them and maybe kind of talk through things with them, and you, as the employer in your mind, what are you thinking?
Well, one, I can't imagine bringing that person in, right? It just feels like they're not going to be ready. I mean, especially for an environment where there's a lot of change, where the expectation is that there are a lot of excited people trying to do something. You want people there that are ready. For me, I can never imagine that would be a hire we would make, because there are a lot of people looking for jobs. And even though the unemployment rate is low, nevertheless, I mean, with most businesses, they will kind of wait through and find the people that seem independent. I can't imagine too many other businesses would think otherwise.
As I turn to Kathleen here, I just want to say I think it is very interesting, Alex's observation that roughly a decade ago, he started noticing more people showing up with less information, less preparation, mm-hmm. and more like just throwing at a lot of things at the wall here. And I see that sometimes too in just the way people approach the talk show. I mean, there are people in PR who send very specific ideas for what they want us to consider. And then there are times people reach out to us and pitch a client and then say, are you television or radio? And I'm going, a little bit of prep would probably do you good before you come in the door with a question like that. So I can relate in that sense. A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk about another aspect of that, because my sense is when you are not as prepared and you're just kind of throwing everything at a wall and you don't look like you're all that interested, you're also the type who kind of ghosts on that one end. Now, I've heard young workers say, hey, I applied for a job. I never got a call back. I never got notified. I don't like that. So they're defending, hey, that's why I ghosted out of, that whole process. So I can understand the psychology of it, but I think there's more ghosting going on in all directions. And I don't really like that. So anyway, that's just me. That's the get off my lawn part of me there, Kathleen. How do you see some of the results of these surveys? And I want to start by asking if you were surprised by any of the results here.
I was surprised because I immediately wanted to relate it to what it is that we experience in this region. And while I spend a lot of time with executives, they're the ones who are making these decisions, much like Alex. And so eye contact, yes. Readiness to come to the market, that didn't so much surprise me. But I believe that one of the distinctions is that we are very enriched with a lot of good preparation by our area universities. And again, that's a broad brush statement, but yet in the conversations that I have with executives where they'll say, would you spend a little bit of time with my son or daughter? And I've even got some, stipulations around that. They've got to be coachable. They've got to be engaged. They've got to be willing. And that's my experience, with most of them.
So it might be a selective sample.
Yeah, a selective sample. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Bringing parents. Have you heard of that? Bringing parents to job interviews.
No.
Haven't heard of that.
No.
See,
however,
this is the Bigfoot thing.
So let me.
Alex
let me,
assures me it's not
however,
impossible.
I will say this. An executive client of mine had a son who was finishing school, extremely introverted. Not surprising that his major was one that would allow him to work in a very solitary research. That was his chosen path, and he was well. But it was the opportunity was to help him get through the interview process. So, I had a conversation with his dad. And it was about this very thing. I said, I know you want to support him, and I know that you see that there's a worthwhile investment in having somebody other than you help him. Now, when it comes time for him to actually go to an interview, I said, and especially if it's virtual, I said, you're not in the background. You're not holding up pieces of paper, reminding him. I said, this is his interview and his experience. I said, you weren't there for 4 years of college. And he had to get through every project, every exam, every study session, everything. So this is an extension of that. And I said, and this is a different iteration of what he has prepared for. So we need to let him do that, because that's the only way he's going to learn, too.
To me, sounds like very sound advice. And mm-hmm. part of what Kathleen is talking about, that you're not in the background on virtual interviews.
Right.
A lot of job interviews now are virtual. And that might seem like an easy time to have a little coaching on the side or off camera. But the surveys are indicating that that is becoming more common and that employers, as you heard from Alex, don't really like it. So, you know, just something to kind of keep in mind. I'm going to grab a phone call before we get Joe's take here. Dario wants to weigh in, and from Geneva. I was going to say Geneva is where Dario is coming from. I don't know what generation, but hello, Dario. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the air. I'm actually 30, so I'm technically a late-stage millennial.
Okay.
And I just had some commentary on parents in regards to interviews. Now, I was a business owner for 8 years, and I've had a decent amount of experience in that. However, in regards to parents and them being around during the interview process, there are a lot of people, myself included, who have very, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, doting and difficult parents who inject themselves into their children's lives and don't allow them to be independent. I see that a lot in my generation of parents who are unwilling to let them spread their wings and do things independently. And I've had my own parents really get in the way and botch a lot of interviews for myself because she'll go out of her way to be involved and lose me that interview.
Mm. So let me just say, Dario, as a father of a 12-year-old now, I'm not good at dealing when he's sick today. He's sick this week. I feel awful when he's sick. When he struggles, I can feel it viscerally. I've had to really work to let myself learn that that is good for him, not to get sick, but to struggle at something, to fail at something. And so I can relate to this idea that you want your kids to be at their best all the time. I am training myself not to be the parent who would do what you are describing, but I think there's a lot of love that comes from it. It sounds to me like you think that that actually is a way of hurting your kid, not helping your kid.
Yes, it is misguided care for sure. It's the term for that in the psychology industry, I believe, is learned something. I forgot the words for it.
Go ahead, Kathleen Pringle.
I think that's called learned helplessness.
Learned helplessness.
Yes, that one. Thank you. Learned helplessness.
Dario, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, really interesting set of experience for a 30-year-old and good data points there. And I think, Kathleen, that again, what Dario's describing is really well intended.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I know what it's like, you know, to really struggle when your kid is struggling. Mm-hmm. But like, have you seen clients like back away and learn that step of saying, all right, they're on their own. I can handle that. They can do this without me. They're kind of spoon feeding.
Yes and no. How's that? So for those, yes. You know, I think that, you know, you would take anybody who's on the front line of an interviewing process, whether that's a, you know, an owner or a manager or a human resources representative, especially with managers, the best managers are going to be the ones who really, truly have a sincere interest in wanting to teach and develop people. And especially when we're looking at this generation, any generation, I can think back in my own experience and say, you know what, here we are 4 decades later in the workplace. And, you know what, I had some really solid mentoring and it was really, in retrospect, it was really more than anything about developing my self-efficacy. It was really about learning how to be resourceful, learning how to problem solve, learning how to ask when I needed help. And so it wasn't about setting me up to succeed by enabling me. And I see that as the greatest opportunity for managers today, leaders, to really be able to embrace the fact that, like, if you think back to your own experience, even though we're in a different world, everybody's got to learn. And this is a whole different ballgame. I mean, think about it. You know, when kids are... and I say students are in school for 4 years. And there's a reason why a lot of colleges, and I've been a participant in this, do an etiquette lunch at the end of 4 years. And it's because there are certain things that kind of went by the by. You're eating around your friends all the time. It's not about that proper etiquette of putting a napkin on the lap. And it's not about, you know, all those things kind of get put aside. And it's the same thing where the kinds of skills, along with temperament and everything, need to be brought up and reinforced. And if it's not going to happen in the classroom, then, you know what, there's a lot of really, really raw talent out there, and this is the kind of develop that's needed.
Yeah, you heard Alex Zappasocian say, it's not that he can't find talent. There's still a lot of great hires out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that some of these trends are, you know, they are different. And so, you know, Joe's 22, and you're a sales coordinator with the Swan family of restaurants. Been there for how long?
Since I graduated in May.
Just a couple of months now. How's it going?
It's going great. Yeah, great mentors, which is a big thing.
Yeah.
And also mentors who are used to paving their own trail. So they're allowing me to do that, but also mentoring me to be able to do that, which I think is kind of that positive mentorship that you were just touching upon.
So I'm going to go down a couple of the points on this list here. Do you think your generation struggles with eye contact?
You know, I would say, I would say I'm not sure, because I feel like peer-to-peer eye contact is probably different than in an interview setting or a workplace setting. So I would say I've never noticed peer-to-peer, kind of like that kind of thing.
Right.
But I also think there's an element of the technology that I have friends who hate going on phone calls. And I'm like, pick up the phone and call. Like, why? There's certain, I think, skills that we're so used to being able to send messages and do things in a way that maybe are more streamlined, but in a bigger picture of like employment and long-term success are hard to build upon, you know, your skills of playing iMessage games for 8 years. You know, you got to learn how to pick up the phone and call the dentist or call your employer, do a follow-up phone call and say, hey, I'm just checking in. How my application's doing? Like, am I still a part of the process? And I think those are skills that sometimes I think people are completely even unaware of. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I really need to call.
You're like, a phone call?
I'm like, yeah.
Who makes a phone call?
Who makes a phone call?
What is it, an emergency? That's right. Okay, fair enough. Now, another topic that was on the survey list for employers, 47% of employers in one survey said they think applicants your age are dressing inappropriately. I think there's a couple of very interesting parts of this. Number one, fashion and expectations change over time. So there may be something generational. Number two, you're in the restaurant industry. And I remember the first time I was in a New York City restaurant where I saw somebody wearing a t-shirt. Now, it was a nice t-shirt, but I was like, I did not know you could do that. And now that's everywhere. I mean, there's very little in the way of dress code anymore. Maybe a few places in town. I'm trying to think of any place in Rochester where you couldn't wear jeans or even a ball cap, to say nothing of the shoes or whatever. So that's another part of it. And then there's just this question of if the pandemic sped this up and if that is more comfortable or if that is sort of lamentable. How do you see the question of professional dress and what your expectations are?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good question. I think a lot of people, especially in like a business world, you know, not during COVID, we're wearing more relaxed things. You see less people wearing ties and stuff like that. Wearing a suit jacket with a t-shirt underneath is like one of a trend that I like, because it's, you know, who doesn't like to wear a t-shirt under their suit jacket? But I think that's a good point, because I always have a hard time being young and being somebody who works a lot of times with people who are more seasoned in their careers. I don't always tell people my age, because sometimes it's a barrier to be able to do things.
Because they'll have expectations or stereotypes of you?
I think a lot of times I get nervous about being young and being like, when I say, oh, I just graduated college, the conversation shifts to being taken like maybe less seriously, or, oh, he really hasn't actually done anything, which is completely fair to their point. But I always go the route of, I would rather overdress for every occasion, because then I want to eliminate every single possible reason to give somebody subconsciously to consider my age as being a negative.
I think that's a wise, you got Kathleen nodding right across the table, and you got Alex nodding right next to you. By the way, before I get into some of the other aspects here, inappropriate dress, what percentage today versus 20 years ago for your job applicants?
I mean, it's not a huge number, but I would say somewhere in the 10 to 20% range show up dressed not well enough. And I think it's probably more like what was being said. It's that they could have made a slightly more conservative choice or dressed the way they did, and they probably should have gone a little bit extra, and they didn't. Now, but there's also some proportion of those individuals who just sort of come in a sloppy way, right? Because it's one thing to maybe not dress up. It's a different thing to come in where, you know, with kind of weirdly shaven, I don't know, kind of hair kind of all over the place, not the hair not combed, wrinkles in your clothes, right? And that happens. I mean, much more so now. And actually, I don't ever remember it 20 years ago.
Interesting. By the way, side note, to be that old guy, finishing up watching, and this has been a years-long project, all of Seinfeld, Cheers, and Frasier, just because, you know, you want to bridge all these generations. Every date Frasier goes on, he's wearing a suit and tie. I'm like, I guess you're dressing for the job you want, man. Yeah. Like, I mean, he's really dressed up there. I don't know people who wear a suit and tie on a first date anymore. And apparently even in the 90s into the aughts, that was normal. So would you ever wear a suit and tie unironically on a first date?
Absolutely not.
No way. No way. It's just norms are changing. Okay, so now there's the question of what did you think when you saw some of the survey results? And if listeners are just joining us, two different surveys in the last 7 to 9 months show that at roughly 20 to 25% of Gen Z respondents are bringing their parents to a job interview. Now, that could mean a virtual interview. The parent is off to the side. That could mean a virtual interview. The parent's sitting with them at the dining room table. And that could mean literally in the office. They're bringing their parent in person. What did you think of that?
I was shocked, honestly. I didn't even think that was a thing, first of all. I was saying to producer Megan Mack before this, I was like, if I had asked my mom to come to a job interview, she would have looked at me like I was insane. She'd be like, what are you talking about? Why would I ever come with you to a job interview? And I also think there's another element of that, which you are kind of setting yourself up not for success. You know, I always kind of have the mindset of going to a job interview like you're playing a game, like you're preparing and then you show up and then it's game time and you do your best. But if you fail, you fail. And that's how we roll. And so I feel like bringing your parent is one added stress. I feel like I'd be more stressed out about having somebody else there like watching you. And I also think it's not setting yourself up for long-term success because I feel like you're also reliant on the people around you. Yes, they might be familiar faces, but when your first day of work happens and you get onboarded, mom is not going to be there. So you might as well say goodbye or text her and say, I'm going to the interview, wish me luck. But I just think that I think it's setting everybody up for failure.
Are you like me, though, where you're like, I don't believe it's that high. I can't believe it's that many.
I don't think it's that high.
I can't believe it.
But you never know. I think the Zoom land is a little bit different. I feel like there's a lot more higher chance of that.
Yeah.
But the idea of sitting down across the table from somebody that's about to be potentially your boss and bringing your parent is something I just really cannot wrap my head around in the conversation leading up to that.
I'm with you there. Steven Webster writes to say, Evan, I'm a Gen Xer, a social person, and an educator. And like you, I don't want to overgeneralize about younger generations. And I have lots of friends and recent students whom I like and admire. That said, I think there is a grain of truth to these stereotypes about Gen Z. In the 80s and 90s, kids were feral and had to develop social skills and solve problems on their own. I don't think we can blame young people when adults coddle them and park them in front of screens all day. My advice to everyone, put down the screens. Maybe pick up a book, hang out with people in real life, get outside, touch grass. Steven Webster. All right, Joe, what do you think?
I don't totally disagree. I feel like there's many good points there because the more you pick up the phone call and call the dentist yourself, the more you work in a job where you're customer facing and you get to engage with random people at a young age, I think is beneficial. That's why I always say like young people working in restaurants is a great thing because you learn when you're 15, 16, even if you're scooping ice cream, you're learning skills about how to talk to a stranger, how to answer a phone call, how to deal with the FedEx delivery man. You know, there's all these skills that you gain doing customer facing things like working in hospitality. I'm also obviously pro that industry, but I think there's a lot of great lessons that young people learn, I've learned, because you're showing up to work with coworkers who are older and more seasoned and more experienced and are used to dealing with great customers, tough customers, and regulars. And in those type of places, I've seen a lot of friends succeed in other industries after growing up in hospitality because they have basic skills of communication.
We're having a great conversation about these changes and trends and how people are applying for jobs, especially the younger generation. And Joe is not representing anybody but himself here, and we are not trying to be piling on any generation. We're just looking at some of the trends. And in a moment, we're gonna talk about maybe a different perspective to the criticism of some of these things. But listeners, if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. I mentioned LA Times columnist LZ Granderson, who was defending recent college grads and Gen Z job applicants in the LA Times on this. And he said, quote, "Last fall when I started teaching a college class, it took weeks for me to get my students to make eye contact and speak in class directly to one another. And some of them want a career in communication. I've spoken to friends who are also educators, and they have seen the same. And this is a direct result of the pandemic." So Granderson has said a lot of what we're seeing here, a lot of these survey results, is what happens when your social skills atrophied, or when you're 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, and now you are not making eye contact with people. Now you're not seeing their faces if everyone is in a mask, and now you're not communicating the way you used to. That you kind of got to relearn some of that. And Granderson is saying, give people some time and space. Let's not slur a whole generation. Like, let's not go over the top here. That was his admonition to all of this. Another listener, a member of Gen Z, says, "The eye contact, I can tell you, is because we are on screens so much, and there were studies that looking at people through screens triggers a flight or fight response." Then went on to say, all of this can be pretty stupid because our group is the first to try to set boundaries, and now people are upset. And she is talking there about the complaint that 50% of CEOs and employers had in a recent survey, that job applicants are asking for too much money or too much compensation. And so this listener, who asked not to be identified, member of Gen Z, says, "We're trying to set boundaries here. This part, I think, is much more subjective." Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to say, well, people are asking for too much money. How dare they? But I think it's also fair to say, was there an imbalance here? And is it okay to negotiate for more? I always thought when I was Joe's age, that I didn't have the leverage in a negotiation. So I'm probably going to take the first offer, and then I'm going to make my way and make the leverage for myself. I'm going to make myself indispensable. I also understand people who say, you made me an offer and I want to work here. I cannot work for that. And here's what I need to work here. And if you can't pay it, you can't pay it. I don't think that's inappropriate. I think both sides have to decide what they think is right. But I don't necessarily see that and go, oh, kids these days are asking for the world. I think they're... To the emailer's point, I think they're trying to imbalance what they perceive to be, or they're trying to rebalance what they see as something out of balance. That is very subjective. So, Alex, how do you see this question on compensation?
So it is complex because sometimes they may have a good point and they may be asking for an amount that, one, they need, right? Because you actually don't want somebody taking a job and being almost from the get-go knowing that it's not enough for them to be able to make a living that way, because that's kind of a recipe for a problem. But what I've certainly experienced, and I know that others have experienced, or business owners, is somebody coming in with just a very strange set of ideas about what the starting salary ought to be with, you know, no experience, let's say. And then actually when they do get the job, also unrealistic expectations of how quickly they will be promoted, given a title with the word senior in it. I think there's kind of a broader point to this. It's this sense of, hey, like within a year or two, I should be able to, you know, make my way through. I think there's a lot of really bad advice online that people are getting about how quickly people can, you know, build their own careers and side hustles and all sorts of things that I think give people kind of a skewed perspective about careers and how quickly you're actually learning. I think also this, I think all generations have, and I don't know if you've ever seen some of these studies, but they've done these self-assessments before over the years, where they will ask employees, do you think you're above average, average, or below average? And a shocking like 2-3% think that they're below average. Well, while we know that statistically that's not really possible. But I think that yes, more recently, because people very rarely get, or less often get, kind of truthful pushback, they don't oftentimes sort of realize their skills, and they're way overestimating themselves, and therefore way overestimating what they should be getting paid or how quickly they should be moving up.
So that, let me follow this point with Alex, and then I'll let the other guests weigh in on this question, because I think there's a lot here, and some of that is related to – a trend that I'm seeing is we are losing the ability to communicate directly with each other when it is uncomfortable, and we're depriving ourselves of good information that we need. So if someone doesn't get a job, I talked about ghosting earlier this hour. I don't really like ghosting because I think good communication is what we all at a baseline deserve. I deserve it from if I'm applying for a job and someone deserves that from me, you know, if they're offering. And I'm not entitled to the job. I'm not entitled to certain compensation, but good communication is, I think, a good courtesy. So someone doesn't get a job, I think you owe it to them, if they ask, to give them some pretty good information, even if it's not lengthy, about why. Give them some helpful information. But I think we're assuming people can't deal with tough information. If someone isn't selected for a team, if someone isn't given a promotion, we think, well, they're not going to handle this well. And sometimes maybe they're not. Maybe we're not learning the skill of taking criticism or taking failure and building from it. So the superiors are not giving good information. And then conversely, when someone is offered a job and they don't want it, they're just as likely in Gen Z, I'm probably hyperbolizing, but they may ghost. They may not call. They may not show up. They may not take it. I hear that all the time, especially in the restaurant industry. And at the very least, I think what they should say is, hey, I'm not going to be at work. It turns out this is not enough money for me, and I'm doing something else. And at the very least, the employer can take that information. I think that that is valuable. I don't think we're good at that right now. And I think we need to relearn that. That's my TED Talk. Thank you for attending. What do you think, Alex?
So I would love to live in that world that you're describing, where people give honest feedback. But, I mean, if you look at other trends over the years, whether it's kind of middle school, high school, where teachers are much more loath compared to before to provide negative information, because whereas before it was more common for parents maybe to come in and apologize for the way that their kids might be acting in class, today they're going to probably have parents come in and basically defend whatever it is that yell at the teacher. And so, like, they don't want to deal with that. Once they get to college, and I'm sure at some point you've probably talked on this program about the grade inflation, the very severe grade inflation that's happened at universities, because, again, tough feedback doesn't go over well. In that setting,
they're also viewed as clients sometimes.
They're viewed as clients, and so there's a lot of effort to make sure that everybody's, everyone's, well, coddled, I'll say, but basically that people aren't necessarily confronting, any sort of deficit that they may have. Now, then, of course, there's, I mentioned before that there's some mental health aspect to this as well. An increasing number of kids in high school and college have various accommodations, and especially if it's for something similar to, let's say, like an anxiety disorder, which makes it a little harder for them to make eye contact, makes it a little bit harder for them to speak eloquently or just feel comfortable and come across well in interpersonal situations. Well, they've had accommodations in maybe high school and college, but those don't apply to the workplace. So I think there are a whole host of things that make it harder, much harder, I think, for kids today to come across well. But by the way, if you are, let's say, an employer who actually gives feedback, well, one, you have to be mindful that if you're talking about them being nervous or not making eye contact, you want to be careful because you could be straying into an issue where maybe you're talking about something that there is some health issue and that's like something you need to be careful of. But also, remember, the rating system kind of goes in both directions. So if I say something that offends somebody, even if I'm well-intentioned and now they're upset about it, well, now they can go to Indeed.com or Google reviews and basically make it sound like we're terrible people.
You're tyrants.
Yeah, we're tyrants.
Work for you?
Exactly. So you have to be much more careful these days about the feedback.
And they do
with
teachers
giving.
Too, to your point about colleges, right?
Well, rate my professor.
Right?
Rate my professor.
Right.
And as you probably know, I mean, many professors, I mean, those rankings from the students mean a lot to them in terms of kind of how they're assigned, how they're graded or looked at for things like tenure. So yeah, I mean, they provide tough feedback at their own risk.
This is a really, really, I think, important point that we should all keep in mind. There's a real price to social media and the internet and instant digital communication that comes with not being able to take bad news and then wanting to weaponize that, and how quickly people believe everything that they will read. So I think there's a bit of a vicious cycle going on with that. I don't know what to do about it, but it's not all that healthy. Now, Kathleen. Kathleen is executive career coach and founder of the Kathleen Pringle Group. When it comes to this idea that 50% of employers are saying, hey, Gen Z applicants are asking for too much compensation. How does that land with you?
So, as Alex said, complex. However, in New York State, we have something relatively new, New York State pay transparency. And so that has done a lot to help both applicants and employers on both sides for different reasons, you know, attract more of the right type of applicant, at least that individual that's interested in that pay range. It used to be that when a salary range was not offered on a position, you'd get people who were very underqualified and had never even made that kind of compensation applying for these jobs, and still, you know, whether it was your applicant tracking system or a human that needed to go through that and vet that, it was very time consuming. But to your point, I think that what's really most important is that organizations really understand, what are we really trying to accomplish here? We have this opportunity, and we need to understand what we're looking for, and we need to put a value on that position, and we have to look at compression internally, where, you know, I hear this over and again, and it's that, and especially in restaurant and retail, where, you know, it's difficult to find reliable people, and so who can communicate, who are, like I said, reliable. And so what happens is that we hired someone 6 months ago at $18 an hour. We need to hire somebody else. It's now, today, we'll hire the next person in at $19 an hour. And it's like, wait a second, I've been here, I'm trained, I'm reliable, and now you're paying the new guy more than you're paying me? You know, compression. So we've got those kinds of things. But, you know, I remember talking to a young person once, and he said, you know, I need $50,000 a year. And I said, can I ask you one question? What makes you worth $50,000 a year? And had no clue. He said, well, that's just what I was told that I need because I have to start paying student loans in, you know, 6 months. And so I said, but let's talk about value. And it was plausible, but it's like value. And most kids, young professionals, don't understand that yet. They just say, here's a job. It aligns with my interests or my major. I want to learn something. And I think that the thing that gets lost a lot of times is that, you know, with your generation, you know, it's more egalitarian. I do for you, you do for me. And when the love is gone, I move on. And it's not necessarily this like, you owe me. It's not this entitlement, but it's more about, like, they're not coming into the workplace playing the same game that we did.
I think that's a broad way of saying it, but I think that there's a lot of truth there.
Yeah.
I think that the values are a little bit different.
Right.
And that's an adjustment for employers who are not part of Gen Z.
Right.
So let me turn to Joe Morrell here. And Joe's a sales coordinator with the Swan Family of Restaurants, co-creator of the Michella Project. Joe's 22 years old, just started in May with the Swan Family. And, you know, you have Alex saying that, I'm going to sum up here, he can see the difference when someone is applying for a job but may have a unique circumstance. Maybe they're a single parent. Maybe an initial offer wouldn't be enough, and they're pushing for more, and Alex kind of gets it, versus someone who comes in, has no real clue, and is asking for the moon plus 50K, and you're going, like, you have no experience, and this feels ridiculous. Employers do have complaints about Gen Z and compensation. Do you think there's a rebalancing going on? How do you see this question on how hard you push and how you bring those values into that first negotiation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of people that are my age that are leaving college. A lot of times people have no concept of what compensation packages actually look like for the careers that they're going to enter. And I think there's that combined with the lack of overarching communication skills presents the problems of, oh, I'm here, I want this job, and I want $50,000. Well, depending on what job that is, that's either very unrealistic, But like the answer, the question why of this follow-up question, I think is really important, because I think that people don't actually, a lot of times, who are young, for the most part, don't understand what their actual quote-unquote employment worth is.
Value contribution.
Absolutely. In the grand scheme. They're thinking, okay, I'm moving on my parents' house. I have loans. I want to be able to go out on the weekends. I want to do this. And I'm going to show up and I'm going to go to work and they're going to pay me and my life is going to be good. And sometimes I don't think people actually put together the puzzle pieces of what my industry actually looks like, what my job actually is, how I fit into the bigger picture of a company. If, you know, obviously everybody's important and part of a company, but how necessarily valuable are you as you are a new graduate? Are you for 6 months? And I feel like those are things, a combination of a lack of understanding of what the package, what you actually deserve or should earn, and the combination of also not being able to necessarily communicate very well in terms of those negotiations, presents this challenge of I want $50,000 and I cannot give you an answer why.
Yeah, go ahead, Kathleen.
And I was going to say, just to build on that, on the other side, on the employer side, we owe it. It's just part of not just an onboarding, but as part of an education process, whether it's still back before they graduate or as, you know, as employers, to really help people understand what it costs to employ somebody. Mm-hmm. Most people say it's $50,000. Well, you know what? We have to match your FICA, your disability, your workers, all those statutory things. And it used to be in New York State that, you know, when you were an employer of a certain size, this has changed, that everybody would get a benefit statement every year. And it would literally, so if you're making $80,000 a year, what it really costs, the ratio of compensation to benefits is, you know, depending on your company, could be upwards of 35% or more. And so therefore you add that on and people are like, oh, I had no idea mm-hmm. that, and, you know, it's not just my company paying me $80,000 plus my vacation. It's all these other things. And then people start to really have an understanding of when you ask for this, you're not just expected to deliver $50,000 worth of value. It's usually 10x, 20x, and we have to teach them what value means.
Yeah, and there's a part of this that I wanted to ask Joe about too when I think about generational values. And again, Joe's not speaking for an entire group of people, just himself here. But I think part of this is there's more information out there in terms of what the top people in companies make. So if you work for a company where the CEO, the president, the owner makes 5, 8, 10, 20 times what you make, you can think about that. If it's 200, 300, 400 times, there's been a little bit of a backlash and some workers are offended by that. Now, the solution, I don't know if the solution is to come in the door on the first day and say, nope, I want what the CEO makes, or I want half what the CEO makes, whatever. I think that backlash could be, you know, dealt with in different ways. But I think that there is some attempt in Joe's generation to rebalance some of what they see as an imbalance. Having said that, it doesn't sound to me like you are bothered by a question of, hey, if you want X, explain to me how you can bring that value. You think that's a reasonable question, as opposed to, hey, there's all this talk about us like a commodity, and we want to feel good about what we're doing, and we want you to feel good about employing us. And when that breaks down, to Kathleen's point, then we move on. So there's different, I think, competing and shifting values going on, but it doesn't sound to me, Joe, like you have any problem if an employer says, hey, you want X, justify it, explain it, make the case. You're happy to make the case?
I feel like that's actually a great thing to do, because like you were saying, it's all about the learning process. Like, do I know right away how the entire organization of a company works in this certain industry or in this certain sector? Like, you don't. You just don't. Even if you have a great education, you're going to something new. You're entering a workforce that you're new at. You're entering an industry that's new to you, and obviously a company that's new to you. And I feel like that's actually, to me, would be really a beneficial conversation to my greater like learning of my career, because I think a lot of people don't know that. And I feel like that's actually a helpful thing when your employer is like, oh, well, like, you explain to me why you deserve this, and then I'm going to explain to you what it costs to employ you, how much people make who've already been here, and what they bring in, and what their assets are, how we value like this grand scheme. I think is really important, because in every company, I feel like there's a lot of times a lack of understanding of maybe the bigger picture.
Lack of communication.
Lack of communication and a lack of understanding.
That's one of the big themes this hour. We got to communicate better. I appreciate this conversation this hour. I am not someone who leaves this conversation thinking, well, Gen Z is just going to kill the workforce. I mean, like kids these days. I don't think that at all. I think that there's always generational change. I think when Alex and mine, Kathleen's generation hit the workforce, our parents and grandparents were going, kids these days. Can you believe X, Y, Z? There's always something. And I think that that's a natural part of it. Or maybe, Alex, you feel like this is the end of American work. No, come on.
No, I don't. And people today come in with other skills, right? I mean, they've been growing up in a particular world. So as 20 years ago, I would oftentimes have to ask people about what kind of technologies have they used, right? Because I was trying to understand like how ready they were to work with new ones. Today, when I see young college students or recent college students, even if their major had nothing to do with technology, for the most part, it's very rare that they don't have certain skills. And yes, that comes at the expense of other skills. And I actually think the best way for them to maybe deal with it is, I mean, one, try to do things like internships. Over the years, I've hired a lot of people, or we've hired a lot of people from RIT. And I can tell you that on average, there's a big difference between how somebody who's, let's say, is a second year that's trying to get their very first co-op, how they present themselves and explain things versus somebody who's already a senior that's already spent 6 months in that environment. They're usually much better. So a lot of this is, I think, fixable, and people should hopefully find, including parents, those overbearing parents, they should find ways to make sure their kids put themselves in the right environment so they can grow.
Those very loving, well said, very concerned, but maybe misguided parents who are going to interviews with their kids. Alex Zapisoshny is CEO of Clario Vision. Thank you for being here this hour. Our thanks to Kathleen Pringle, Executive Career Coach and founder of the Kathleen Pringle Group. Thank you for being here, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
And thanks to Joe Morrell, Sales Coordinator with the Swan Family of Restaurants, co-creator of the Michella Project. I think you're on a rocket ship, man. Thanks for being here. Thanks for telling your story here. We've got more connections coming up in just a moment.